The days of the huge scare about AIDS are behind us. That's good news and bad news. AIDS does not often mean a death sentence anymore. People with HIV can lead long lives when the medical protocols are followed. But the fight against the disease is far from over. The threat is still a great one. Dr. Donna Sweet believes we have replaced the fear with complacency.
We don't do the education we used to. We're continuing to see a rate of rise that's far more than it should be in the young population. 25% of all new cases occur in young people 24 and under. And we're still seeing 50, 55,000 new infections a year in this country. And it's entirely preventable. So I tell young people, take a little time to prevent it. Then you won't have to spend the rest of your life treating it. Because right now, it is a treatable illness, but it's not a curable illness. We're continuing to try and work on that. Whether we'll see that in my lifespan or theirs is hard to know. But the way to avoid having to deal with that is not get it. And we have failed, I think, our children in terms of continued education about what's out there. Safer sex is not something we talk about. We've gotten ideologically right of where we spend much time actually talking about sex to young people. Many places have sexual education that really is abstinence only, and that's fine if that's what's good for you, but at some point our children are going to decide to be sexually active just like we did, and consequently I like to believe if I educate them when they decide to do that, they have a better chance of doing it safely, appropriately, protecting themselves not only from HIV but from chlamydia and syphilis, which is on the rise, gonorrhea, herpes is still out there, HPV, the human papillomavirus, which leads to cervical cancer in young women. Those are the things they also need to be concerned about, and we're just not talking about it.
Are the sex education classes in the state schools in Kansas really mostly abstinence based?
I don't know the current data. At one point, over half of school systems in the state had opted for abstinence-only based sexual education. It's no longer a state mandate to do HIV or sex education. It's school district specific. So each district can decide what they want to teach and how they wish to teach it.
Recalling back in, I guess it was the late 70s, when the disease started to be named and people started to die pretty rapidly, and there was a population in the United States. It seemed like it was mostly in the gay community. It seemed like it was a disease that affected gay men, and it was almost untreatable.
It was untreatable. It was first described, or at least there was something going on in June of 1981. There was an article in Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which is the CDC's publication that described cases of a rare pneumonia, pneumocystis pneumonia, in gay men, and also an incidence of Kaposi sarcoma, which before then was unheard of in a young white population. By June of 82, we had a name for it. We called it AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. And in retrospect, in San Francisco General, places in LA and New York City as well, there were cases that went back into the late 70s that, when they looked at them retrospectively, were probably HIV AIDS cases. Realized then we did not know what caused this disease. We did not come up with the etiology, which was then called HTLV-3, until 1984. We first had a test for the virus in March of 85. So between the beginning in 81, 82, and 85, you actually walked in very sick. You had AIDS by the time you showed up. So you had pneumocystis or Kaposi sarcoma, cryptococcal meningitis, all the things that did kill people. We didn't have any treatment because we didn't know what caused it. We had very poor treatment for the infections that these young people were getting. If there is a good side to HIV and AIDS, it spurred the development of novel agents to treat fungi, to treat viruses, to treat the things that these young people were getting. All of that has been to not only the benefit of the HIV community, but to the transplant community and the cancer chemotherapy community, the other populations that get these diseases that are largely in the immune-suppressed population. So we fast forward from 85, when we could at least tell you had HIV, although many people chose not to know because there was huge stigma, a lot of discrimination, and nothing to do about it. So if the word got out that you were infected, you could very well lose your job, your home, your partner, your family. So there was a reticence to be tested. So again, up until 87, 88, when we had AZT, that was the first drug, cytobutine, 90, 91, we had DDI, D4T, in retrospect, horrible medicines, but it's all we had. We were able to get the survivability from an average of 6 months from presentation to about 18 months between 1983, 84. When people came to me in the early 80s, I could certify anybody for hospice, which meant they were probably going to die within 6 months.
Why were those drugs horrible drugs, the early ones?
It's true of almost any drug family. When the earlier drugs, you can figure out how to make a drug do what you want to, but with a lot of toxicities, and it was the toxicity. As you then learn more about the moiety, the chemical moiety of the drug, and people can do research and figure out what pieces of it are causing problems, then they can refine it. They can make newer drugs that have more specificity for the organism instead of the other cells in the body that sometimes get affected. So with time, we've come from very toxic drugs like AZT, DDI, D4T, which we almost never use anymore, to now the joy of single combination pills, so that I can give somebody full dose therapy, triple drug therapy with minimal toxicity with one pill, one a day.
And how expensive is that?
About $3,000 a month, $3,000. So again, you have to take them, and there are still some toxicities, and you have to get them paid for, which in the stage of my career, I spend a great deal of my time advocating, trying to raise money, trying to keep services covered, because as I told you, people have a normal longevity if they have their medications. If you take away their medications, this is going to be right back to dead and dying time, and I just don't want to see that. I lived through that one time and don't want to have my young people do that. But it's exceedingly difficult, as you know, especially in the socioeconomically deprived population, to get the kind of care that they need.
Dr. Donna Sweet and her KU Med Center team take care of three-quarters of the HIV/AIDS patients in Kansas. She also travels worldwide to lecture and offer expertise to other countries. She will participate in World AIDS Day on Sunday in Wichita. For KMUW News, I'm Eileen LeBlanc.